All right, we are going to pursue the study of Psalm 16. Well, this has come in connection with a consideration of David as a saint. And we are identifying all believers as saints. And we are doing it on the grounds that you have been separated unto God from a decadent and inane or empty world. The preacher of Ecclesiastes, as a matter of fact, Ecclesiastes, which is a Latin word that has to do with the idea of holy things, or more like religious things or church things, the word Ecclesiastes was an addition by later translators. The real name of that book, which we call Ecclesiastes, is Koheleth, which in Hebrew refers to the preacher, the proclaimer. So the book of Ecclesiastes is a word to describe the vanity and emptiness of this world. And a very good job it does. You should not read Ecclesiastes with the thought that all is hopeless. It is only hopeless to the unbeliever. That is, to the one who has made his ultimate identity with the world. Anyone who identifies with this world as his ultimate good is going to come sooner or later to emptiness. There is that moment, of course, when the young spirit breaks free of all restraining forces and sets out to pursue the joys and pleasures of life which have been denied to him by his elders and all other imprisoning individuals. And he sets out to enjoy this, and his spirit breaks free, and there may be some time of great enjoyment or pleasure. But I think there are many, many times of emptiness and despair along the line, but let's just give the benefit of the doubt. But here is one setting out to explore all the good things of this world, the good life, and to capture for oneself the essence of what one has read on the billboards traveling the freeways. So that his life will be, or her life will be, sophisticated and good and strong, and be always with the beautiful people. There will always be great enjoyment and fulfillment and all the rest of it. This is the vision. This is the hope with which one springs free from the confinements of his tyrannical roof and goes out to enjoy life. All right, now the preacher, Koheleth, the man in the book of Ecclesiastes whose writing is telling us that everything is vanity and empty and it runs out, and that, of course, is the great hazard of the good life. It soon gets boring. No matter how much good you've enjoyed, the grasping soul wants a little bit more. And there's no stopping point to that. You see, it all runs out sooner or later. When we talk about a group of people whom God calls his saints, we are talking about those spirits who have been able to go beyond the paltry, inane, and vain things of this world and tie into that spiritual thing or realm, or to tie into God who never runs out. The fulfillment of life, potentially, or the enjoyment of life, potentially, is without limit in the realm of God. If you come to understand the fulfilling importance of the things of God, you find a limitless realm to work in. Now, there is always the problem of one looking back over his shoulder when things get a little tough and saying to himself, well, I never really wanted this. I would rather go back to my old life, which was a lot more fun. This is hard. I'm going through very tough circumstances, and I'd rather go back. I may not have been very spiritual, but at least there was not the same torment that I now feel. Well, the rigors or discipline of God's way in your life is designed to help you break free of the need of being confined by earthly pleasure, and to gain spiritual prowess, spiritual capacity, so that you can be free of these artificial things, takes discipline. It's very much like the athlete who goes through a rugged discipline and training, so that when he gets out on the football field, or whatever his fascination is, when he gets out there, he's not going to have to be thinking of every move he makes. He's going to break free of that so that he can go ahead and play out the game with freedom, you see, with the ability to focus on playing the game, not on the movements he's making. If you'll stay with me in this a little bit, we may come out to something you can use here. This all does tie into the 16th Psalm, but just stay with me for a minute. Here's the golfer. He's going to go out and learn how to play golf. He gets an instructor if he really wants to do more than knock the divots about. The instructor starts telling him how to swing his golf club. And he gets him into the stance, which I will not try to duplicate here, so that he can swing his club properly, because the pro is going to tell him if he swings the club straight, the ball will go straight. But to swing the club straight, he's got to train his muscles to be coordinated to swing that club in a particular way. So he's got one great problem, focusing on how to swing the club. But that involves one in a lot of contortions that are unnatural at first. And there comes a moment in the golfer's life as he's learning these things that he suddenly feels overwhelmed by all the little things he has to remember. How to hold his hand, how to hold put his shoulders, how to keep his eyes focused or his head focused. There are probably 50 different motions involved in swinging a golf club, all of which are essential if that golf club is going to go straight. And it's learning those 50 motions, I'm guessing at that, but it's not too far off. Learning those 50 motions where every muscle of the body has got to be directed in order to swing that golf club straight. Alright, now the point is that the individual is saying to himself down the road, he says, look, I thought golf was supposed to be fun. There's no fun in this. I go out there and swing till I'm dizzy, and I always keep forgetting this thing and that thing, and if every time I go out on the golf course, I'm going to have to keep always thinking about where my head is and where my shoulders are and where my feet are. What fun is that? Well, you know the obvious answer, that if you keep at it long enough and diligently enough and give up the pleasure of the game for the sake of learning it, there will come a time when these motions will be natural. And then you can forget about all of those things and enjoy the game. You see that? But if you don't go through those disciplines, you're never going to really enjoy the game. The reason you're never going to really enjoy it is because you're always going to be slicing off into the trees and breaking your clubs over your knees and everything else. You're going to be having a miserable time. Now you see what you are trying to develop on this earth is what we would call spiritual expertise. The capacity to be free of the need for a lot of those things which tend to clutter the life and complicate it and cause distress. To be free of the crutches that become a millstone around the neck. To be free of all these things so you can pursue your life with satisfaction and success. Not always happily, but successfully. And there's a certain deep feeling of peace that comes with the thought that you're doing your best. I don't know that you would say that a golf pro, professional, is sprinting out on the course, exuberantly saying, oh, it's going to be a lovely day. We're going to have so much fun today. It's just going to be a grand day. They don't go out that way. They go out with a keen desire for success. In fact, any athlete comes to what he calls a peaking time. He peaks out. He comes the day before the game sometime. He's got to have all of the, I'm going to say juices flowing, the hormones, and everything has got to be at peak performance. He's got to have the drive, the motivation, the excitement. But they don't go out to have a happy time on the green. They go out to win. Now, the analogy is very direct. Living a Christian life, that is, living a life that is identified with Jesus Christ, living a life that is identified with the spirit realm more than the earth realm. That means living for the intangibles. Intangibles means those things that you can't really put your finger on. A tangible means something you can get your hand on. A tangible is a wash machine, a water softener, a vacuum cleaner, a lawnmower. Those are tangibles. An intangible is insurance, debentures, stocks, mutual funds. All these things are what we call intangibles because they have to do with things that move in the direction of protection, success, all of this sort of thing. That's an intangible. Now, living a life of spiritual quality, even while you're doing it with tangible things, is an intangible. I don't want to confuse you on this, but it's really an interesting and important concept. Now, why did I go into all that? Because there is an intangible factor to almost every tangible in life. There's an automobile is a way to move about. It's not a chunk of metal on wheels. It's a way to transport yourself from one place to another. Now, in the world of tangible things, and we're going to talk about that as the world of material objects. We have a building here. We have chairs that we sit on. But they are only really meaningful to you if they free you to focus on intangible things. That is, if you just use these things so that your mind and spirit can be free to think in terms of the more ultimate meaning of life. Helping other people, for example. A housewife today has a number of conveniences. They do not, by any manner of means, make her work easy. I don't want you to think that at all, because it isn't so. But these conveniences should make her freer than she has ever been in her life to reach out, help others, to give the time to her children that will help them more. She's not married to a washboard or a... She's not tied down to washboards and butter churns and all the things that women used to have to get involved with. Of course, in the days that women were involved with butter churns and washboards and things like that, the kids were roaming the countryside with not too much more serious than an occasional rattler or something like that. But today, the woman has a gargantuan task, keeping her eye upon children who are in the midst of a very hostile and threatening environment. It takes a lot more today for a mother to handle her children properly than it did in the days you could just send them out the front door or the back door and they could play with a chicken. You know, that was all there was to worry about. Run with old Yaller down to the creek, you know. They were not likely to run into a junkie around the next corner or a pusher or something like that to say. Life was rather simple. Today it's very complex. You live in a hostile world. Your children are out in a hazardous jungle of humanity. And I suggest then that the freeing of yourselves to some degree, by the labor-saving conveniences that you have, should give you more time to put your mind to the task of bringing these children up in a more commodious way, that in a way that will meet the need of the hour. So, all the way through, I'm trying to draw this connection. I'm trying to say to you that we are living in a world that demands some application. We have to go out and drive an automobile. We go to work. We have to earn a living. We have to do lots of things that belong to the tangible world. But we will be successful if we use those things to produce an intangible quality of life that is better. Not the good life, which is consumed in enjoying these material things, but the better life, which is a fulfillment of you as a being, as a spiritual being. Because that's what you really are. All that is of the flesh is transient and temporary. You are becoming experts in the spiritual life. Not expert teachers as such, but I mean, you're becoming accustomed to and acclimated to living a life that sees not the thing in itself, but what the thing in itself ultimately contributes to you as a person. Now, when we talk about saints, we're talking about a community of people who have gotten their minds and their sights focused on the things of God. And it is more important to them, for example, to be here in fellowship with a body of believers than it is to go out and frolic on the beach. Now, while there's nothing wrong with frolicking on the beach, if it is in the nature of refreshing and fulfillment of your physical needs and so forth, nothing wrong with that at all. Now, one of the problems with being a prisoner of the world here is that while you are enticed into it to enjoy the pleasures of it, soon you find that it is really a prison. Those things you use for a delightful escape become, as a matter of fact, a shackle upon you. You become shackled by them. The crutch turns into a post to which you are shackled and chained. That's the way escape mechanisms go. You take an escape and some route looks very open and enticing, and you find out instead it's not an escape, it's a dead-end street. In a very vivid way, you can say that a person might be enticed into a situation where they would be imprisoned. It has happened over and over again in this world where people are enticed into situations by being shown what wonderful things are there. For example, here's Las Vegas, which is really the ultimate playpen, I suppose. People go up there enticed by the glitter, the brilliance, the fun, the pleasure. It's so enticing. And one goes gladly, great expense to enjoy it. And then they get trapped by it because it runs out. Even if you had limitless funds, you would not be able to really enjoy it too long before it got extremely boring to you. These are things that are traps, and the Satan lays these traps for you because his way, the way of Satan, seems, as the Bible says, as Jesus says in the Gospels, it seems to be broad and enticing with glitter and everything drawing you on, but God's world seems to be narrow and dull. What you don't see is that Satan's broad path leads you ultimately into a narrow confine and into a pit. Whereas what looks like a cave at the entrance turns out to be a grand palace. What looks like to be a great palace in the beginning turns out to be a cave in Satan's way of things. So you see, what God is trying to do with you is by allowing you to go through disciplines and rugged times, distresses, he's trying to perfect you in the quality of the Spirit that will help to free you from the demands of this worldly inane, if we can say it, this vain, empty pursuit of happiness, which a person cannot define anyway. You'll never get there to happiness, because once you get to what you thought was happiness, that will not be happiness, and you'll have to redefine it and shoot out again. You get to where your goal is, and you get there, and you find out that's not where it's at. You have to redefine it and go on again, you see. So it's a continual pursuit of the vain and the empty promise. That which glitters on the outside but is dull within. Now, Satan makes the good things of God look dull and foreboding, and he makes his unwholesome things look enticing and glittering. He has a way of making good things look bad and bad things look good. Take the attitude of the athlete. Say to yourself, if I'm going to become so free from the bondage of inefficiency in spiritual things, if I'm going to be freed from the bondage of inefficiency, I'm going to have to go through the disciplines of life that help me to grow in the Spirit. Then you can find yourself out on the field with the expertise you need to be free to function without thinking of every movement you have to make. Now, there is a device in the golfing circuit, among the amateurs, not among the professionals. There is a device which controls your swing. You put this equipment on you, over your shoulders and around your chest, and it imprisons your arm in a certain direction so that you have to keep swinging in the right way. And then that eliminates the need of disciplining all your muscles. The problem is, the moment you take it off, you're spastic. That's when you come to the golf club. Don't despair. If your life today is apparently in difficulty, in distress, if you're having tough times, and you look out at your neighbor who doesn't care a thing about God, and he's just having a great time. Everything seems to be prospering for him, he's having a lot of fun, and everything is exciting. You look out at him, don't look out at him and think, oh, I just wish that I didn't have this millstone of religious things around my neck so I could be free like he is. You find that he really isn't that free. You find that he's a prisoner. Prison houses in the mind, after all. Who was the poet that said, stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. Being a prisoner is a state of mind, I guess. If you think you're a prisoner of the things of Christ, you may become a prisoner of it. If you take that attitude, just like a wife may consider herself a slave and so forth and become just that, or she can look at herself and say, I'm a very important key to the function of this household. The more that is demanded of her, the more important she is. In the business world, the best way to get rid of a pesky opponent is to give him a job as the second or third vice president in charge of public relations, and let him sit at a desk down the three doors from your office and let him sit there all day. Give him nothing to do. In the political terms, it's called kicking a man upstairs. When they gave a man the job of vice presidency, it was catapulting him into oblivion. A woman in a home, for example, the more indispensable she is, the more she will be involved in activities, or the more she's involved in activities, the more she can realize how indispensable. She's an indispensable part of that family unit. If she wants to raise children that grow up to be healthy and strong and properly oriented to life, she's going to take a lot of work. But if she sees herself as a slave, it affects her entire life. An artist can feel, I've used the illustration in one of the books of Michelangelo. If you've ever been over to the Vatican and seen the paint job he put on that ceiling, you can imagine that he was far more than a house painter. But Michelangelo could be lying on his back on that scaffolding painting the ceiling and feel like a great prisoner. What a prison house that would be. The dome of the Vatican, day after day and hour after hour, would be a pretty much of a prison. But he didn't feel like a prisoner because he was creating something. On your life, as rugged as it may be, First of all, let's say in your role as a housewife or as a husband, a provider for the home, if you see yourself as creating something, creating lives, building something, you will not look at your work as drudgery. All of these things are important to consider. Now, you must see yourself as creating yourself, as a spirit. And all the hardships and the work you go through and the difficulties of doing this are going to build you as a person. If you want to take the shorter view and say, well, I don't want to worry about those things because I want to have fun, then in the days ahead, you pay the piper. There's nothing more ludicrous and absurd than a 60-year-old teenager. And there are lots of them around. Or a 70-year-old teenager, or a 50-year-old teenager. The world is full of them. Pardon to the teenagers. Or if you're 15 or 16 or 17 or 18, it's a wonderful thing to be a teenager. In fact, I've said to a lot of young people, one of the tragedies of adulthood is that people try to jump over teenage into adult, and they miss the teen years, and they miss a very important part of their growing up. And that's the kind of person that tends to meet, if you don't take your teen years when you're a teen, you're going to have to take your teen years when you're in the 20s or the 30s, or whenever you decide to wake up and see who you are, you'll find that you're a teenager. I've said in some meetings that, you know, marriage counseling, often a person will say, well, he's got to take me the way I am, or she's got to take me the way I am. And I have said to them, well, that may be the way you were when you're 16, but now at the age of 30, it looks a little absurd, you know. There is that growing up, necessity of growing up, taking each level of your life as you grow, but it's a lot more enticing to leap over these things. Or the person wants to go into, just to use this as a very earthy concept, but to use acting. Here's a person who wants to be an actor. And so they want to be a soda jerk in the drugstore on Sunset Boulevard so they'll be noticed by a director instead of going to acting school. Being a soda jerk may get you attention if you've got the built for it, but it's not going to give you a career in acting. Anything you do has its shortcuts and it has its proper training. In terms of your spiritual life, your development as a person, you cannot take shortcuts and leap over the disciplines that are required to make you the kind of person you want to live with when you're 50. A lot of marriage problems are right there, that the person, you're trying to force that person to be with you when you're not very pleasant to be with. You can't even stand yourself. How can you expect your wife or husband to stand you? But that comes from shortcuts, failing to live out the disciplines and so-called drudgeries of learning how to be a person. Now, if God puts you through a course, He will give you those disciplines that you need, disciplines you would not take for yourself. You have to have a coach to set the disciplines up for you so that you will develop to be the kind of player that the coach wants. Now, you have to have Christ to set the disciplines for you, to give you the life that you need to develop you to the best potential. So the most important way then to look at your life is to merely accept this thing as from God. Now in this Psalm 16, which we won't really get into anymore today, but there are verses there that speak of our lot in life. He says from the Hebrew, "The Lord is the portion of my inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot." Now, he's talking there about the lot in life that you have. We use the word lot to mean what you've been dealt, the hand you've been dealt. The psalmist is saying, I receive that hand that has been dealt to me from God, and He sustains me in it. In Psalm 22:55, he says, 55:22, pardon me. Yeah, cast thy burden upon the Lord, and He shall sustain thee. The word burden in Hebrew there is lot, what you've been dealt with. Cast your lot upon the Lord, and He will sustain you. You've been dealt a hand. But to some degree, we louse up the hand that's been dealt to us. And so some of it is of God, and some of it's our own carelessness. But whatever it is, If God has given you a particular lot in life, or if it has come to you in this way, the best way to handle it is to receive it from the Lord as being that which He has for some reason allowed in your life, and to live it out. Then, and to find that this is the coach's way of training you. And then you will find that as you grow older, you are growing more mature. And you're not going to be a 50-year-old teenager, you know, when you're going to be at the age of 50 or 60 or whatever, you will have accumulated all of this growth and maturity. Now you can cope with the swift currents of the 50s and 60s. You can cope with those swift currents more easily. In fact, you can cope with them, period, which a lot of people are not. I've often thought what a tragedy it is that a person reaching, say, retirement age, being put into a community, that is, let's say a person who's reached an age where they can't properly take care of themselves, and they're put into what we call a convalescent home. I've dealt with many in this position. And instead of now looking about them and saying, what are the opportunities here for me? Here they are surrounded with people. They don't have to be lonely. Unless they look disdainfully upon everybody about them and don't want to associate with them. They're going to sit in their rocker and disintegrate and be lonely because they don't have anybody to talk to. And they got 50, 60, 100 people to talk to all around them. But they're rebelling against their lot. And so one woman that I dealt with quite a bit, she just lie in her bed and deteriorate. There's no need of that. Assume that if you are there, the Lord has a reason for your being there. And you take it and live with it. And I use that illustration not because there's anybody here in that position, but to illustrate to you that even what we might regard as the end of the road does not have to be that. Or the work that you're doing for a living. It may be very distressing to you, but it's whatever you're in. Now this is the way things have gone, so let's accept it in the name of Christ and use it as the discipline that is needed to bring about His purpose within us. Now that really is what it means to be a saint, to be separated from the prison house of the tangible, material world and freed to explore the realm of the intangible, which is not confining, which is limitless. The realm of personal growth is the intangible you should be deriving from the tangible world that you are a part of. You take it in the name of Christ, and all of life becomes a growth experience and a fulfillment. And you quit looking around for funsies, because it's time to get off the merry-go-round and start thinking in terms of something a lot more solid to do with your life. Remember, we took a bunch of youth to Europe, as you know, one year. And one young fellow spent all his time riding bumper cars. They have them over in Europe. And he, every town we went to, every city of major size that we went to, here's Paris. We lived in a marvelous setting in Paris in the Place République, which is right in the heart of the commoner of Paris. I mean, the citizen of Paris, the old apartment buildings, everything. Marvelous opportunity to explore that area and explore the mind and thought of the French people and so forth, and the Parisians. And so forth. What does he do? He goes up there into the corner and rides bumper cars over. I thought he might write a book and profit somewhat from his trip, seeing Europe by bumper car. But that's a very good analogy of that's what's going on in life. Everybody around you are neglecting the spiritual maturity and growth and accumulation of experience in favor of seeking out the bumper cars to ride your life in. To be a saint means to be separated from that prison house of bumper cars and be catapulted into a true desire to see the significant things of life.